also have Bongi George, who is acting COO of the organization, and who's also Zimande, that some of you may be quite familiar with. Is acting head of finance. So everybody is acting. So we accept it, and there are reasons, and I believe that we are going to sort it out very soon, these acting situations. I'm going to ask Chairperson, not only myself, but the three people who came with us, they're going to talk, including the lady. She's going to talk, Madam George. I think it's proper in that way, so that we hear the operational people really answering questions. So I did say to them that I'll be there, I'll be supporting them, particularly my friend Honorable Stolle, who asks difficult questions all the time about you know, why are we not sorting out where he comes from in Uganda? So I said, no, we'll get to that. Development will come on a report, story. Don't worry about it. So thank you very much. Without really wasting time, is she going to start? Bongiwe, you on the floor.
Good morning, Chairperson, and all of the members.
Let's move the mic closer to you. Tell the gentleman not to be selfish. Let's move the mic.
Okay, sure. Good morning, Chairperson, and all of the members, and the colleagues who are sitting here with us. Chairperson, I'm not sure whether it's become now an abuse that women should be taken this hot seat here in Parliament, but be that as it may, we welcome the challenge. You are here, we're going to do that.
No, you want a 50-50, so don't complain.
Okay, Chair.
Believe in your capabilities. So.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The presentation overview, Chairperson, this is we're going to talk about the purpose, legislative mandate, strategic goals and priorities, CIDP programs and people. Overview of the CIDP performance that has been audited, achievements and non-achievements, and audit committee outcomes, and corrective action plan that has been taken to action, and the financial report. There are also annexes that are attached, Chairperson, to this report that as we go through the presentation, you see reference to certain annexes. Chairperson, as well, as part of the background, I just want to borrow from the Minister's forward, which says that you are here to present the CIDP annual report that highlights the milestone that the CIDP has achieved, as well as the challenges that the CIDP has actually faced during the 2016-2017 financial year. As part of the legislative mandate, Chairperson, we just want to highlight a simplified version of what is the CIDP's legislative mandate, which is to provide fresh leadership that will stimulate sustainable growth, reform and improvement of the construction sector, provide sustainable growth and participation of the emerging sector in the industry, improve performance and develop best practices, apply a uniform application of policies and ethical standards, construction procurement reform, improve procurement and delivery management. And lastly, to do monitoring and regulating the performance of the industry, including the registration of projects and contractors. In the financial year 2016-17, there were strategic goals that were set out by the entity, and the priorities of those strategic goals are listed here in 1, to strengthen and enforce the CIDP regulation to reduce construction risk, all forms of fraud and corruption in the sector, build and capacity the industry to deliver quality in infrastructure, contribute to the transformation of the construction industry, position the CIDP as a knowledge authority in the industry, and maintain financial sustainability through creating alternative revenue streams, provide excellent services to the contractors and the clients nationally, to optimize organizational design that support the effective delivery of the mandate, of the CIDP mandate. And lastly, to strengthen and maintain good relationship with stakeholders through effective communication. Chairperson, we highlighted that there are programs in CIDP that are in place that make sure that this particular mandate is being carried forward. And these particular programs, there are six in total, but just to give them their names so that we know exactly when we talk about CIDP, what are the core programs that drive the CIDP mandate, and also what is the purpose of those particular programs that we have in place. And first one, Chairperson, is the construction register services, which you normally refer to as CRS, which its purpose is to implement, manage, and improve national registration services covering the register of contractors, the register of projects, and new register that the CIDP may implement in terms of the Act. And the second program, Chairperson, is construction industry performance, which we normally refer to as CIP, which determine and establish and promote appropriate measures aimed at improved performance and best practice of public and private sector clients, contractors, and other participants in the construction delivery process. The third program, Chairperson, is the procurement and delivery management, which develops, promotes, and monitors uniform application of CIDP prescripts through all organs of state and industry stakeholders, including procurement standards, construction procurement reform, improved infrastructure delivery management practices, and CIDP code of conduct. The fourth program, Chairperson, is provincial offices and contractor development, in short, we call PCD. It offers an efficient and effective registration services through the CRS program and provincial offices. And the fifth program, which is the CEO's office, it provides strategic leadership to construction industry stakeholders to stimulate sustainable growth, reform, and improvement of the construction sector. And the sixth program being our corporate services, which promote an optimal organizational culture that supports an effective delivery of the CIDP mandate. Now, Chair, my task for purposes of this presentation is to go through the non-financial performance of the CIDP, and we're actually going to start with the overall performance that has been audited by the AG of South Africa. In overall, Chair, we have targets total of 38, and the number of achieved targets are 27, and non-achieved is 6, and then we have 5 that the auditors queried during their audit, which were 5, and in overall, the achievement for the CIDP for this financial year, 2016-2017, is 71%. Chair, quickly going through to the achievement that CIDP has managed to be got clean audit, if I can put it that way, from the AG. That was the one that they've audited to say that, okay, this one can pass the test of time. They've verified the information and they say that these targets were actually achieved. I'll actually try to look at the annual target against the strategic objective as put up in the presentation. So the first achieved target, Chairperson, is the CRS Fraud Prevention and Detection Plan, which has been approved, and it was part of our strategic objective in combating fraud and corruption. And this is an ongoing process, Chairperson. I think it's revised on an annual basis. The second annual target that has been achieved, Chairperson, is the implementation of the customer satisfaction survey system for registration of contractors and for renewals, which gives effect to the efficient and registration services to our services that we provide to the contractors. The third target, Chair, related to the annual assessment report on the implementation of the best practice contractor recognition scheme, which has been achieved and which its purpose was to regulate to minimize construction risk. And the third target, Chair, relates to the CIDP compliance monitor, which is actually published on a quarterly basis, and that target has also been achieved. And it's one of those say that we're going to make reference to the annexa. In the annexa, we're giving a breakdown of how the clients have complied with the register of projects. The This one is the establishment of the development of the standard for contractor participation, which has been achieved, which was linked to the strategic objective to develop and implement best practices registers in support of improving the performance of the industry. Moving along, Chair, we have number six, which was a report on the pilot that CIPP has done on conquest, and that is Chairperson, that target also has been achieved. And then the annual assessment report on implementation of the best project assessment scheme, that target, Chair, has been achieved. We are in the process of implementing and developing. We are no longer in the process of developing. Now we're going to be implementing the best project assessment scheme. Everything that is in place in terms of the regulatory framework that we want to put in place. The eighth target, Chair, related to facilitation of the skills development agents. The CIDP has already started with that project, Chair, which is the workplace opportunities for learners so that they can acquire the skills required for the industry in order for them to have a better option to be absorbed in the workplace processes. The ninth project, Chair, a target that has been achieved is a postgraduate conference that CIDP normally hosts biannually with the university, in consultation with the university, in support of the university, so that the postgraduate student can share their thesis and their work that is done academically in terms of that particular topic that they've chosen related to the construction sector. And the other project, that target that has been achieved is related to the construction monitor, which is also published on a quarterly basis, and it's also part of the annexure that we're going to be looking at towards the end of this presentation. The SMSC business condition that has also been achieved, Chair, CIDP is working in conjunction with the Bureau of Research Council to assist them in terms of doing the survey related to the conditions related to business confidence at the state. That is going to be applicable to the contractors that are registered with CIDP. And target 12 is related to, again, scoping of the CIDP register of professional services provider to assess where are we in terms of making sure that CIDP actually develop and establish this register of professional service providers. The work has been done. The scoping of the feasibility of establishing the register of professional service provider has been done and it has been achieved. The annual assessment on the implementation of the principle for prompt payment that has been achieved, Chair, is related to the regulation to enhance procurement reform and delivery management. Regulations related to enhanced procurement reform, again, they have been submitted to the minister. They are in the process of being processed by the department. And the draft framework for client recognition scheme has been developed, so the target has been achieved, Chair. The final research report on the contract management challenges that the clients are facing has been developed and is in place. It's available for any person who might show interest in how the clients are facing challenges related to how to implement the contract for construction work. Target number 17, Chair, quarterly reports are being submitted to our Audit and Risk Committee to assess the level of compliance that the CIDP is actually enforcing and how we're progressing in that particular aspect is also being achieved. The annual assessment for a state implementation of the integrity management. So the standard for clients has been developed, Chair, and it's one of those projects that we are going to be engaging with National Treasury so that we can actually see how we're going to better effect better management of integrity for the construction industry as a whole. The annual assessment report for rollout of the improved model of CPO's forum, that has been achieved, Chair. It's in place. We normally, on a yearly basis, do assessment to check how have we affair with the consultation with our stakeholders in relation to clients. And the quarterly report on training and capacitation of public sector clients, that has been the chief chair. We have a program where we normally do the presentation to all the provinces, as and when there's a need for the client as well to ask us, make a particular request related to training needs that they want CIDB to impart on them related to our prescript. We do that, and that has been achieved, Chair. Related to transformation of the construction industry for contractors, we set our target, Chair, for 86% that contractors on GB and CE will be on 86% for 5 and 6, and that target, Chair, has been achieved. In terms of our register, I can actually show indicate that particular achievement. And then we say for grade 5 and 6, I think this one is supposed to, speak to women, but we'll refer back to personally look at the annex chart. So the target of 68% has actually been achieved. Yeah, it is black women that are sitting now at 68%, and then 31% of for GB and CE also has been achieved. We make reference here when you go back to the annex chart that will indicate exactly what are the status, what are the rates or steps that we're talking about those percentages. 20% of grade 9 are women owned, and that target share has been achieved. And there's a report that was done to look at the feasibility of procurement models for limited tender opportunities. That report, Chair, is available. It has been done. And the report related to the stakeholder management outcomes approved by the board has been done. It is part of our legislative mandate that we do have national stakeholders forums each and every year. That has been achieved. There is a report that has been produced to indicate how the responses or queries that we have received from contractors have been packaged so that we can actually produce that particular report that indicates the stakeholder engagement outcomes with our contractors. Lastly, Chair, because I've mentioned that there were 27 that have been cleared by the AG, is the monitoring and the review of the CIDB training and career development, which is related to staff development for the CIDB employees. Now, Chair, we go to the ones that have not been achieved. As I've mentioned earlier on, there might be challenges that CIDB has experienced during the financial year 2016-2017 as a result of the targets that we are sitting with that have not been achieved. One of those, Chair, related to the registration of contractors and related to the turnaround time. Our annual target, we said 94%. We're going to meet the annual the turnaround time of 21 days registration of contractors, but we are sitting now at 82% at the end of the financial year. And the reason for non-achievement is stated that the target is attributed to the lack of adequate human resource to effectively administer the register of contractors. The second non-achieved target, Chair, is related to the online registration of contractors. This, Chair, has not been achieved because CIDB is in the process of reassessing a software solution and platforms that will be cumbersome, or that will be an overview of all the CIDB IT requirements. The third non-achieved target, Chair, is also linked to the system. So if the system is put in place, the outcome will mean that the CRM system will be enhanced, and all those IT requirements are going to be taken care of for all the CIDP requirements for IT. The fourth one, Chair, is related to the prescript for construction procurement competence standards. That has not been achieved, but the reason is being that it's being under review and the competence standard is being developed, and that will be finalized and be discussed with the National Treasury for purposes of implementation of this competence framework. Last but not least, Chair, the non-achieved target related to grade 5 to 6 construction companies owned by women. We are now sitting at 44%, and our target was actually at 49%. So that target was missed only by 5%, but the impact thereof is that the reason being that there was a slower rate of industry transformation than it has anticipated, and there was a slow take in terms of in the economy and the deterioration of the business condition. And the last one, Chair, on the non-achieved target is also related to the non-achieved in terms of women-owned companies, where we set our target at 40%, but now we're sitting at 39.3%. Chair, I'll quickly go through down to the information that was not verified by the auditors, which led us to put this information into our presentation, unreliable performance portfolio of evidence that the auditors didn't get the sufficient information that they needed in order to verify whether this particular target has been met. This information, Chair, they can only verify on this specific one, where we say that for grade 1 application, 92% were compliant in terms of registration within 48 hours. The auditors only can verify only 52%. So this also forms part now of the information that has not been, a target that has not been achieved. The second one is related to the sessions that CIDB said that it's conducted. There was also no sufficient information to verify that this has actually taken place. And the third one was also the non-availability of reliable information for the auditors to verify. As a result of we couldn't, they were only saying that this information is unreliable, so it cannot be passed the test for the auditors. The fourth one related to this, Chair, was also related to no evidence being made available to the auditors in making sure that this target is actually intended, was achieved as intended. The last one that the auditors also picked up, Chair, was also there was no evidence sufficient enough for the auditors to give us a clean statement that this information has actually been verified. As therefore, we try to separate information that that was not achieved during our own processes and the information that the auditors actually came and clarified to say that we don't have enough information to verify that this was actually being done. And I think on that note, Chair, I'll hand over to our acting CFO to look at the finances and the audit outcome.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members, colleagues from the department, as well as colleagues from CIDP and colleagues from FEMIDESE. In the year 2016-17, the CIDP achieved an unqualified audit opinion, but however, there were issues which were highlighted by AG, of which apparently those issues prevented the CIDP from actually obtaining a clean audit report. The issues, as my colleague have alluded to, was well, the first one on the performance of information, where CIDP and AG could not actually express a reliable and accurate on the information we provided, in particular when relating to the portfolio of evidence we submitted. where AG apparently said that they could not actually express an opinion based to what the CIDB actually submitted. If I may just go a step back to the issues, particular issues by my colleague here regarding the issues which were not achieved. In particular, if you're looking at what the AG did, in their sampling method, when they were sampling, because AG does not actually provide 100% assurance on the work they do. So on the sample they did, they identified that the percentage of the information submitted were not sufficient to give them any assurance and reliability. As a result, then we were able to not get those adverse opinion on those particular issues in the performance of information. If you go to the second issue which was raised by the AG, it relates to the irregular expenditure which was identified by the AG, in particular within the financial year being the 2016-17. I think the irregular expenditure determined was an amount of about 1.4 million, which was identified by the AG. And of that 1.4, for the current year, only about 660 related to a contract which aroused within the 2016-17. And 812 relates to a three-year contract which was running, unfortunately, with any national treasury regulation, as long as you're making a payment on irregular contract, then it's going to be deemed as irregular. So in a nutshell, for 2016-17, we only incurred about 600,000 of irregular expenditure. But having said so, as CIDB management in particular, and of course working with the board, we were working very hard to make sure that we clean up and incur no irregular expenditure, in particular from now, since that a contract which was the legacy have actually now lapsed and ended. Other issues of control inadequacy which were raised by the AG. One, the issue of the vacancies within the CIDB. In particular, the chair did allude to the fact that if you're looking at the CIDB right now, it's a bit of a Hollywood. Of course, the members of will understand that CIDB is going through an exercise of OD. As a result, you can see by the acting arrangement that in place. AG as well did raise that as a concern to say controls might be compromised if the CIDB and the board does not actually address the issue of making sure that we've got permanent people in place in those positions, in particular within the senior management level. And the second issue which was determined by the AG relating to control was issue whereby the processing was processing and reconciling of items was not pretty much maybe done or done according to prescribed delegations, and of course it's CIDB management is something which definitely we are addressing, and we're making sure that we're putting people in place to actually make sure that that function of segregation is done correctly. So, and of course there were other issues relating to the monitoring which were put in place, which were cited by the AG. Insofar as the CIDB management, we then of course trying to make sure that we are continuing on this quite a health bill insofar as how we manage the affairs and financial affairs of the CIDB. We then use our benchmark against what the AG prescribed or issue as a dashboard or ratings. Insofar as the rating is concerned, I think one of the things which one will highlight is the fact that if you're looking at the dashboard or the dashboard the AG the dashboard issued by the AG for 2017 in comparison to the previous years, well, I think there is an answer to the effect. We have actually improved the CIDB, in particular when it comes to the issues of controls as well as issues of our policy and how we actually manage the affairs of the CIDB. But however, that dashboard we use as a guide, in particular within all our management meetings and as well as our ESCO meetings, whereby we try to address and then come up with the plans of making sure that the three elements which are still outstanding, which the AG wants us to improve on, that we are able to monitor, as well as making sure that we are working on them pretty much holistically as a company. And the other plan that we've put in place is to try to make sure that we employ our CITB internal audit unit to actually be our kind of a watchdog insofar as checking us and the rest of the team to make sure that we are able to address all the issues raised, in particular from the AG point of view, as well as the issues being coming up from the internal audit report. Because if one looks at the internal audit report as well as the AG report, there is a bit of a correlation in so far as issues which are being picked and similarities. So I think we do try to make sure that we are coming up with a comprehensive plan to make sure that we address and those issues, so that the CITB, pretty much in a year or so, we are able to actually deliver a clean audit report to this committee, as well as to the Department of Public Works. Of course, we are tracing those issues on a monthly basis, and of course, making sure that we assess and assess those action plans which are put in place by management, in particular within the areas of the performance information area, as well as the issues of financial discipline as well. Insofar as the performance of the CITB, I think members, if I may take you through the performance for the AM, CITB is a Schedule 3A company. By default, we are not supposed to be making any surplus, nor making any loss. However, I think for the 2016-17, we have made a bit of a surplus of about 7 million. But I mean, it's a decrease of people take about 10 million from the previous year, where we recorded about 16 million surplus. And I think with comfort, I can actually give them, I can assure the member that we have been able to, received sort of a condonement to retain those funds from the National Treasury, because those funds, as my colleague did allude to, will be actually be utilized toward the investment that we said we intend to make in coming up with an ERP system or the integrated software. So we have actually engaged National Treasury. They've given us a green light to actually reserve those funds to actually invest in coming up with a system which will be able to make sure that CITB improves their each general processes, as well as the business processes as well. Insofar as revenue is concerned, I think the grant decreased from 65 to 52 in the year 2016-17. However, if you're looking at the revenue which we are raising from the contractors, it saw an increase of about 11 million. And also we also had I think pretty much an increase in our finance income, being the money we received from investing with banks of almost about 5 million or so. However, then if you look at the administrative expenditure, it was pretty much in line with the previous year, and I think pretty much the you can just note that the increase in the administrative expenditure is pretty much your inflation adjustment or your cost of living adjustment. In the personal expenditure, in the previous year, our personal expenditure was about 76 million, and in the year under review, our personal expenditure was about 81 million, give or take about 6%, which pretty much account for adjustment of as well as cost of living adjustment. If one goes to the balance sheet. The balance sheet, if I may just take the members through the high level of our balance sheet. Under current asset, we've actually had an increase of about 21 million. And the increase pretty much is coming from the cash reserve the CITB is holding. We have about the increase of about 21 million for the cash resources that we are having. Insofar as the current asset has decreased from 21 to about 17 million. Pretty much the decrease is attributed to the depreciation, which is a normal accounting treatment. And yes, of course, members will understand that CITB, due to the fact that we are going through the exercise whereby we are restructuring, we not actually had huge investment insofar as the assets are concerned. However, I think the board has taken a strategic decision to say CIDB now needs to resource itself insofar as making sure that it sets up its own office accommodation, as well as making sure that it has to provide asset for the determine the structure. So for the 18-19, that investment might totally give us a different picture. I think pretty much CIDB will have a huge investment in the area of fixed asset. And then if you go to the liability side of it, the liability side of it, I think pretty much you can see everything is within the line. I think other than the issue whereby CIDB, we actually under the finance list, I think the only issue which is outside of the norm is the issue of the provisions as well as the issue of the finance lease obligation, where CIDB negotiated better leases insofar as the printing contract. But in a nutshell, I think the CIDB's financial position as well is very much stable, and I think it's also showing signs of improvement insofar as the percentage is concerned, whereby it's reflecting a growth of about 7% or so. Then if one goes to how the financial year, how the programs were allocated insofar as budget is concerned, my colleague did indicate that we've got about six programs within the CIDB, and that one thing I just want to highlight the fact that this is to highlight the fact that we are going through an OD. So this was the final year of the then structure, whereby we had about six programs. Going forward from 17-18, our programs will be reduced to four. But I will actually give details of how those programs will be resourced. I think the construction register services, of the budget of about 144 million, the portion of about 24 million. Then the construction industry performance, which deals with monitoring of the industry, their budget was about 12 million. Then the PDM, which is a compliance unit within the CIDB, their budget was 15 million. Then the provincial offices and contract development, which pretty much is the kind of a phase of the CIDB in the provinces, their budget was about 29 million. Then the office of the CEO was resourced to the extent of about 17 million. And then the corporate services, which was responsible for the support function, the budget was about 47 million, giving us a total of about 144 million. However, on Indian MTF, this is going to be the new program of the CIDB as approved by the board. We have a construction industry performance and transformation, which I think they are pretty much a responsibility to actually drive the transformation within the construction industry. They are budget pretty much within the NCF would be as detailed there. Then of course we have a specific department which is pretty much responsibility is to just make sure that there's a contract development as well as the development insofar as the construction industry is concerned, and we also as well within the NCF, that's how this will be funded. Then the construction industry and regulation and advocacy, which is pretty much a unit responsible or in a nutshell the engine of the CIDB, will take a considerable amount of the budget in 17-18, taking about 64 million, then in 18-19 taking about 68, and I think pretty much on 2020 taking about 75 million. Then of course the administration, which will be which is comprising of about four units, the CEO's office, the corporate services, finance, IT and strategic and government unit will be resourced as highlighted there in the slide. I think pretty much that covers how the CIDB performed. Thank you, members.
Chair, just we round off our discussion. In our presentation, we make reference to the annexures that are part of this presentation, but those annexures are in Word documents. I would like to just to open it up for the members to see when we talk about compliance monitor, what is it that we're referring to. Let's move the thing now. Okay. We are making reference, Chairperson, we talk about compliance monitor. We should say that it measures the level of compliance by the clients related to the register of projects. So this is the annual
you can talk, ma'am, as you got it in front of you because we've got a hard copy.
Oh, do it as well. Sorry, I thought you don't have the hard copy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I was mentioning, Chairperson, that we have made, in our presentation, we made reference to the annexure, which is annexure 1 in particular that I want to talk about, which refers to the compliance monitor, which is compliance against the register of projects, of how clients are making use of our system to register the projects that have been awarded. So the steps indicate how the district municipalities that we have assessed have performed, the local municipalities, the metros, the municipal entities, national departments, provincial departments, and state-owned entities. Chairperson, just to highlight that there has been a slow intake by clients into this register of projects. But over time, I think we're seeing some progress in terms of making sure that they do actually register their projects on our on our system. The next slide, Chair, I think is making reference to this thing is letting me down. On the business condition that we refer to, that that CIDB is looking at with the Bureau of for Research, Economic Research, which is assisting the CIDP in terms of assisting, in terms of the grades that we have, how are the business conditions are affecting those contractors. So they normally conduct surveys on a quarterly basis and they do assessment of those surveys. And Chair, we also do the monitoring in terms of its transformation. In our presentation, we have also made reference to the achievements that CIDP can actually reflect on the system, on the register of contractors, how the contractors have progressed through the grade, and CIDP also monitors their B11 in terms of a transformation to indicate where are we and where are we sitting in terms of moving with those particular targets that we set ourselves for transformation in our register. I think, Chair, that's basically what these annexures are actually covering. To indicate to where are we in terms of what we're saying that we're monitoring in our register and the surveys that have been conducted in terms of the business conditions. And I think, Chair, on that note, thank you so much for the opportunity and your time to give us an opportunity to listen to us. It might be boring, but stay.
Oh, thank you very much. Can we just switch off the mic? We are living in a new age and a new dispensation. The first time that I ever heard in my life a lady say it might be boring or something. Ladies are never boring. They never said that word boring. Eh? Only when men are talking they say, hey, are you bored now or something. But no, thank you very much, ma'am, and your colleague there. honorable members, question time. Honourable Ryder, Honourable Speak, Honourable Tassoli, Honourable Mateus.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, well done on the unqualified audit. it is good that we are using the tax money, taxpayers' money, and we are able to account for it. Having said that, Chair, when I was a little oaky, I used to get sent by my mother to the shop. A loaf of bread used to cost 80 cents. So my mother would give me a rand and send me to the shop. But the thing is that she would always insist that I give her a change, so that 20 cents had to come back. And anyway, about the second or third time I went to the shop, I realized that a loaf of bread may cost 80 cents, but a half loaf was 45 cents, and a packet of Willard's chips was 25 cents. So I helped myself to some chips. I took a half loaf back, and I gave her a change. She'd asked for a change. I gave her a change. I gave her the half loaf. And I was surprised that I got a hiding, because she'd asked me for a full loaf. So we're sitting with the same thing here, Chair. We've given the CIDB a budget. They've spent the money, 94.6% of the money they spent, but they only came back with 71% of a loaf of bread. So I think that we need to have a look and see why the money that was allocated to achieve certain outcomes has not been achieved. So if we have a look at some of them, let's look at slide 23, for example. Effective and efficient registration service to be provided. And the reason for non-compliance there says non-achievement of the target is attributed to a lack of adequate human resources to effectively administer the register of contractors. But if you look at the salaries that were spent, the money got used. So you had the human resources. The money was there to pay for the human resources, but you didn't achieve the target. You can't say that it's because of lack of human resources. If you're looking for CVs, phone me, send me an email. There's lots of people looking for work, lots of qualified people, highly intelligent people looking for work. If you need human resources, let us know. We know where to get those CVs from. The next non-compliance issue was effective and efficient service, registration service. And it says there that a strategic decision was taken to reassess software solutions and platforms, and planned registration software projects were halted. Again, the project was halted, but the money was spent. The next one, CRM enhancements were not undertaken to prioritize due to the priorities set by the CRS program, but the money was spent. The next one, the competence framework is being reviewed, but the money was spent. So my point is that you're spending the money, what are you spending it on if you're not achieving your targets? And if you're changing your targets, is it pointing to bad target setting to start with? So I'd like some info on that. Then let's look at slide 27, where the CEO's office was tasked with transforming the construction industry, contractors. The reason for non-achievement here is a slower rate of industry transformation than anticipated due to, amongst others, a slowdown in the economy and deteriorating business conditions, which on the face of it looks fair. But if you go and have a look at your registration fees, you've exceeded your target or your budget for registration fees. So that means that there are contractors out there that are wanting to register. But obviously we're not getting to a situation where we are sufficiently transformed. You can't blame the economy. People are registering. There are people that want to take it up. And I'm wondering, you know, that explanation doesn't wash with me because of the fact that there are people out there that are applying, that are registering. So if I go on the ground and I speak to contractors and I say there's a slower rate of industry transformation than anticipated due to a slowdown in the economy, the contractors on the ground are saying, but we are here, we want work, we need work to get ourselves upgraded on CIDB. And this is the biggest issue that many of our contractors are facing, is that first step up. Okay, they can't access the system. So I'm not sure that your reason there is correct, and I think that some deeper reflection needs to take place there. Slide 30. relates to an unreliable POE, and I saw the comment about POEs. Now, ladies and gentlemen, POEs shouldn't have come as a surprise. And I see that there are one, two, three, four more slides that relate to unreliable POEs. That's basic record keeping. That just points to internal controls. But specifically that one on page 30 is that the auditors verified only 52% of grade 1 registrations were activated within 48 hours and not 95% as reported in the end of year, the end of the financial year. Who's fibbing? Is it the AG or is it yourselves? So those really are my questions. And then, of course, I always like these pictures with the smiley faces because even politicians can understand those. I do note, however, Chair, that only one changed from a yellow face to a green face over the year. That's always an indicator, ladies and gentlemen, that's someone telling you it's a red or a yellow face. That's an area to focus on. There's only one that's improved. I encourage you to try and have a look at those areas and focus on improving the performance going forward. Again, it's not a hard smack. It's a gentle smack because I think that unqualified audit is great, but we need to strive for clean audits. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. You know, when the previous presentation was being done, then it was speaking about why we have an acting chairperson. And I think gentlemen, the chairperson looked at me and they were laughing. And I was wondering why they were laughing. Now I understand because they're in a similar position. So I gave them a funny look, but now I understand why you were laughing about that. The mention of those acting or the acting chairperson in the, what was it? Anyway, agreement. Chair? Okay, just a few issues that I would like to raise here. Firstly, on slide number 11 to 21, where there's issues, you deal with the non-achieved and the achieved. I notice, and I just would like to get some clarification on that, that your program 4 is not covered in either the achieved or the non-achieved. I don't know if there's any reason for that. Because all other programs 1 to 3 and 4, 5 to 6, are covered, but program 4 is not covered. So could we just get an explanation as to why that is so? Then on slide number 19, if you look at that, which relates to program 5, the CEO's office, your progress report there is, in my view, unless maybe I just don't understand it, unclear, because your target is 86% or more, and then your progress report is also 86% or more. Should it not be a figure that you've achieved, or is there something that I'm not seeing? Similarly, with your 68% more for transform construction industry contractors, I just look at your target versus your progress report, and it's actually the same information. It doesn't give me any information or clarity. And then slide number 36, which is concerning, and I know that the acting CFO, did give an explanation as to why that is the case, and also that there will be an improvement. And that, you know, the problem is that with irregular expenditure, while there might not be a loss to the department, it's happening once too often. It's irregular, simple as that. It's money that has been spent for a number of reasons, maybe not authorized, etc. And if I refer to the annual report, and you see that the action that has been what has the description that is given there, Chair, it's that, for example, the amount of 17,000, sorry. No action taken as employee concerned left the organization. The next one, no action taken as employee left the organization. No action taken. And then in some instances, it gives you an explanation that the disciplinary action was taken against the employees who caused the irregular expenditure. Now, surely, when somebody leaves the organization, surely we can't say, well, okay, that person is gone, so nothing can be done about it. I mean, the money has been irregularly spent. So I'm sure that action can. So for me, that is why we have irregular expenditure on a regular basis, because of exactly that, is that there's very little action, if any, that is taken. There's no consequences that are taken for perpetrators of this these actions. So I think we seriously need to look at these incidences of irregular expenditure. Slide number 41. Oh, okay, just explain to me, I just don't understand this for some reason. I normally do. But I see your assets are 192 and your liabilities are 78, and unless this is just an abridged financial position, you know, what is the information that has been excluded from that? Because normally your financial position must balance. And in the old days they used to call it a balance sheet. And then, lastly, Honourable Chairperson, on slide number 43, well, obviously, from slide number 42, I see your adjusted appropriation is 144 million, and then in the medium term, which starts with 2017-18, you're asking for 168 million, which is about a 16% increase. Yep, I'm sure you need it, but why such a big increase in expenditure? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Fick. Honourable Satori, Mr. Honourable Satori, Honourable Fick, I wonder if you should not just meet with the acting DG advocate, Bukela, about that issue. Please, we will allow you quickly to meet with him. Okay. Thanks, advocate. Honourable Satori.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson,
my first question is, what I want to get to the, how many black-owned construction have been upgraded to grade 6, 7, 8, and 9? Just a straight question. And the other Chairperson, what I want to get is the transformation, because it seems that there is no transformation in this construction industry. No transformation at all. Do you have a system? And the acting, because we cannot just unchallenged, we leave that unchallenged, the issue of acting. Yep. If you check the report, the audit report, it shows that most of your metal emphasis are on irregular expenditures and vacancies. So when are you planning to fill up those vacancies? Do you have a target, the time frame of filling those vacancies? Because we cannot just say we have senior management acting. We are in the studio now. And another Chairperson, another challenge Chairperson that I saw, if you check on this, on page 85, under note of annual financial statement, under details of irregular expenditure current year, Chairperson is choking. We cannot say if support, no supporting document of SCM process followed, but there is no action taken because of the employment concern that left the organization. The whole process, there is no process, but there is a lot of money that was spent on those projects and programs. What is going to happen, if you can tell us what is going to happen? What action are you going to take? Because you cannot say those employees concerned are not in the organization or the rest of the organization. What action is followed? Those officials who done these things. And the worst part of it that they have no tax clearance certificate. How can you give somebody a contractor where you have no tax clearance certificate? One of the officials says we are guys. We accept that we are guys. The last one, Chairperson, is
future will come. But thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Matej.
I am spoiled for choice. I have two mics. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. We're always happy to see that you have unqualified audits. Your skills school program, how effective is it? And are we getting more young people getting involved in the construction industry? And how are you keeping tabs on that? I mean, do you have a concentrated program? Because we have... We still have this problem in South Africa where so many people actually just want to, they think university is the be-all and end-all, and we do know that we have a shortage of artisans in our country. So I would think that this should be one of the programs that that should be a focus on making the construction industry attractive. I mean, in South Africa alone, we have a long way to go in development and infrastructure. I mean, and it's a worldwide thing anyway, so you would think that you'd have more programs and more money spent in that regard, targeting both from high school through to primary school. So just speak to me more on that program, or speak to us more on your skills program at school. And I'm not buying this thing that you are not able to do registration within 21 days because you have staff shortage. You've increased your fees for registration, right? Am I correct? So your fees have increased for registration of contractors, and then you don't have HR and you don't have human resources. So I'm agreeing with my colleague here. It doesn't make any sense. So you can't have an increase where people are paying for fees, right, and they're paying and you've even increased it, and you can't make HR or human resources available to make sure that system runs effectively, especially since it seems to be a good income generating process, well, not process, but a good income generating stream. Yeah, that's the word. Thank you, stream, for the organization. So I would think that you would work extra hard to make sure that it's run as efficiently as possible, especially getting the online registration done. And we have millions of IT companies that are so efficient these days. Within a week, within 2 weeks, they can put something together and this program can be run out. So I think it's unacceptable that that thing is still not doing very well. Your targets on women, you have failed in both regards. Yeah, there was two failures on reaching. I think it was in level two and level three, but it affected women. So obviously I saw the red flags there. So what program, so what are we doing so you can achieve the program? And look, it wasn't a dismal loss, like I think it was by a percentage or so. But even the percentage set at 40% is not exactly high, given that there are more women in South Africa than there are men by over a million, but on the target that has been set. So what's actually been happening now that you know that it's hard to attract women or to reach the target? What programs? Because there has to be an action plan for you to do that. And then that also speaks back to your action plan on where you also failed to meet your target under the office, provincial offices and contractor development, right? So you don't produce evidence to support your target. So what was your plan, right? Because you said that, right? You said that and you said, okay, we're going to provide better services or whatever it is, but then how are you going to prove it? What was your plan? Because you have to plan. You can't set targets and not have a plan on how we're going to prove that we've been able to achieve it. So why weren't there survey forms filled out, or why was that not done? It just means that you're failing to plan or to implement your plan as well. And I think I'm covered by the rest. Oh, yeah, the disciplinary action you said that was taken against the employees. How many employees were involved? I think it was with their one for 380,000. Okay, so there was one where disciplinary action was taken against the employees. So I want to know how many employees were involved. Are we getting the money back? Like, what process happened? And then obviously there was someone where no action was taken for 380,000. And this was the investigation into the registration of contractors. So why was there no action taken against the employee? It's on your last page of your audit, Essential 3, on the back page. Right, you can see the details of the current year irregular expenditure. Are you following me? Yeah. So there's no action that was taken there for 380, and then there was action taken against those. What action? And I'm also going to echo the same thing, is that employees just being dismissed or officials just being dismissed is no longer good enough, because it does not, I mean, sometimes they're actually involved in this whole corruption, so them being dismissed is no big deal, because on the side they already have received a contract for whatever amount of money, so they said. So them losing their jobs is not a, it's not something that's going to stop them from doing that. So we are creating an organizational culture where, you know, okay, there's no consequences here, I lose my job, but hey, listen, I still got a contract, or I still got paid so much on the side, I'll go on and I'll get another job. So we'd like to speak to that in terms of criminal charges, because it's irregular stealing money at the end of the day, and we need to have that done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Let me also take the opportunity of welcoming Honourable Jobo, that has just come from the Labour Portfolio Committee to join us. Welcome, Honourable Member. Thank you for making it. Just a question that I've got on page 18 of your annual report. The total summary of cases investigated. Now, what action has been taken in line with what my other colleagues were asking about all those? And on page 19, the pending of the finalization of these cases. What percentage are you now in finalizing some of those cases per quarter? And then on page 80, it speaks for itself, the whole lot of acting people. Yeah, we're not, I think there the bosses, the DPW, I'll also come in there and answer some of those things. But over to you, Chairperson, and your team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for really taking time, particularly the questions that were raised are very relevant. Let me say that the CIDB is largely a regulator of the industry. Yeah. Really largely a regulator. Yeah. Now, having said that, in the last year, we then started to examine what does it mean to be a regulator in the industry? And also, what does the D bringing in terms of development. So when we did this strategy session, we thought it's not enough just to regulate. We've got to take proactive action to help develop the industry, particularly the black sector in terms of BEE and so on. So we came up with all those new strategies, very, very new strategies. So what we are hearing here is something quite new that we've set to ourselves and set targets to say, here we are, we've got to do something about this. So these are really very much self-imposed targets. And I have said to my executives that we have to say things as they are. We cannot come here and just talk about the achievements. That's easy to do that and hide things. You know the concept of what and all? When you look at yourself in a mirror, you've got what? See yourself as it is, then find a way of removing the what. That's really the journey that we're doing. And that also pertains to the two people we're presenting. Yes, they are acting, but we thought, no, let's put them in the firing line. They must come and present so that they can start to begin to take ownership of the running of the organization. Now, having said that, I think the acting CEO is going to come in to answer a whole range of questions. But we are on a journey. We are on a very a little bit rough journey. The acting is correct. We've been asked and we've been many times. There are reasons why no one is happy. I'm not happy with the fact that everybody is acting. It's actually not acceptable. The issues of corruption, as you know, we've got the SIU on a full-time basis there in the last year, that looking into all the things and the wrong things that are happening. But I think that in terms of the positions, and I'm told that the minister cleared the matter yesterday, we have advertised for five senior executive positions, starting with the CEO. So that once we begin to do that, maybe by next year sometime, maybe even before December, we'd make formal appointments. And then all those programs and all the yellows that you see, Honorable, we would begin to fix it with properly qualified executives with accountability. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Chair. Honourable members and Chair, I will try to deal with some of the difficult questions, and then the ones I leave I will hand over to the acting COO and CFO. The first difficult question, I'm going to start from the back of the questions, the one in relation to skills, and the question was in relation, what are we doing in terms of the schools program? The CIDB does not have a schools program. When I say schools program, I'm stopping at grade 12, anything up to grade 12. We don't have a program for that. However, there is a skills pipeline proposal that was developed by the entity that presented yesterday, that is the Council for the Built Environment, which mapped out everything that is required to be done in terms of skills within the built environment and for parties to find their space in that. The CIDB is participating in the skills question through the register of projects because we have to use that enabling legislation for us to be able to participate in that particular area. Our participation is not for, I firstly want to deal with the parts where we are not, so there's just clearly a demarcation. We are not involved in the part of professionals. We are involved in the part of artisans. And within that particular space of artisans, we are involved in terms of construction in particular. The reason why we are in construction, we're in construction because out of the five potential registers that can be established, the one that is active and the oldest is the Register of Contractors amongst the two that are active. Now, that is where we have tracked and seen the shortages of artisans that are required. The Skills Development Agency has been approved by the Minister of Public Works and also the MECs of Public Works, the entire portfolio across the whole country. What the Skills Development Agency seeks to do, it will take a particular percentage of funds. I think the CFO will just assist me with what that percentage is. I think it's 0.5% of every rand spent in infrastructure to be set aside to be invested in TVET colleges and all other agencies to skill people in terms of construction skills, construction artisan skills. So that is where we're actually participating in that particular environment. It is scheduled to come on streams, acting CFO, around the end of 2018, if I'm correct. That's a timeline it has. So once we start to see that first stream of money coming through, then we can directly fund the actual skilling of artisans in construction. So that is our level of actual involvement, where we're taking people who would have the requisite basics required to enter TVET college so they can become artisans. So that is our level of involvement. That is the first difficult question I just wanted to deal with, that we are not involved in the schools program. The schools program is within the terrain of the Council of the Built Environment. The other difficult question was in relation to the issue of staff shortages that were being used as an explanation of why we are not achieving. And if I may be allowed, there are two issues that were raised in terms of that particular question. There was the issue of around fees for registration that we need to deal with. And then there's the issue of the first three sets of questions that were asked with the analogy of change and work being done, money being spent, but we're not getting the results. Maybe let me then start firstly with the issue of registration fees. Registration fees have not been increased at all. What has increased is the activity of people applying to be registered. So the fees have not increased. So that's the one thing. Now, if you look at the financials, it is the item that is called income in advance, acting CFO. The issue we're having there when you're seeing an increase is that we are dealing with a system issue that we're trying to resolve that we have not resolved yet as management of how do we actually collect the monies. Do we take your money before you when you are registering for something, or do we take the money once we say you are actually eligible to get a particular grading for registration? The current practice we're having, we take the money in advance when you are applying. And now what is happening is that, I will use my name, Mpezeko Construction Company will be aspiring to be, let's say, a grade 6. But Mpezeko, in terms of what they submit and what we need to evaluate you against, you cannot get to, grade 6?
Hmm.
Yeah, to grade 6. You then qualify for grade 4. Now, the fees for each grade are different. Now, what then is we're struggling with is now the repatriation of the money back to the contractors in terms of the differences, firstly, of those fees. Secondly, also the fact that we are keeping that money during the process of registration, which is gaining interest on our behalf. So those are the issues we're trying to rectify. How do we repatriate that money back, or whether or not we keep that money? We ask for that money after we confirm for what grade you are actually supposed to be registered for, vis-a-vis you paying upfront before you know the results outcome. Then, the first three sets of questions are linked to the issue of staff. I think where the chairperson came from, I think that's where I want to start from also, just to provide a context. Part of that context is that CIDP is going through an organizational design process, because CIDB is not adequately organized in terms of a competency framework currently of how many posts it should have, how many in what particular areas in terms of competencies, also in what particular numbers to be able to handle the volumes of the business that it is doing. That is it in its current format, which is why it's being redesigned. So it is, as much as it wants to become unbelievable, a fundamental reason why there is a lack of non-performance in the areas of non-achievement. Because we just don't either have the right competencies sitting in the right places to be able to process the work that is required, and also don't have the right numbers to be able to process the volumes of what is coming on board. And this is also has been informed by, I'm looking at my colleague, sorry. The name of the research that was done, not the research, it was the survey that was done.
Gotcha.
It was called the culture survey, but it was a survey to also to assess the state of the organization. Where is the organization vis-a-vis where it should be? And that has come out that CIDP is actually at maturity level 2, way below where it should be for an organization of its age.
Yep.
And for the work that it is actually doing. So we are being honest and coming upfront into saying that the organization lacks numbers and it lacks certain competencies to execute.
Yep.
All the functions it is mandated to actually to execute. And the OD exercise is intended to redress that. And we're at the phase now, as of next week, the subcommittee of the board and with the entire board will be looking at the options proposals in terms of the microstructure that needs to be looked at, that's informed by issues of saying, looking at the asset footprint across the entire country, the required service points for all the potential 5 registered, and if you look at all the mandates, what are all the required competencies for the organization, what kind of organizational structure should we have? And the reality is that the CIDB has developed organically. This is the first time since its inception in 2000, it is doing an assessment of how should it be organized so that it can discharge its work adequately and appropriately. And if I venture to speak around the ministry, the minister was briefed after he assumed the portfolio, and the minister has expressly indicated he wants to participate in this particular process because he wants to see this particular entity to perform properly. So then the second part, to answer part of the three sets of questions that were asked in the beginning, sir. Sorry, I just forgotten the name of the honorable member. Rider. Because of the issues I've also explained, that's one part. The other side of the coin, when you don't have a clear competency framework that has been designed for an organization, it also means your procedures have also not been designed adequately. So all the issues you are raising around work happening and not getting value for money are all linked to those issues of not having the right processes. So we are an organization that is being, reconstructed while it is still working. So it is an admittance. I'm not going to defend the indefensible. So those are, I'm just trying to provide context and an explanation to what we're actually facing. And I also want to refer to one of the annexures I think that was referred to that was speaking to the faces. If you were to look at the areas of failure, not necessarily failure, the areas of where we could be doing better, because they are yellow, they are not red. Failure would indicate red. Is that you are, if you, the issues that we're, I'm also dealing with, you will excuse me, honorable members, you will tell me which questions I'm not answering, but all of these issues are interrelated. If you look at the issues, there are two subcategories of those faces that are indicative of the problem that we have. One is in relation to human resource with an emphasis on leadership. So if you've got vacancies, things are going to slip through the cracks. So that's part of the problems that we're facing on the areas of non-achievement and the issues of portfolio of lack of portfolio of evidence, that there's not controls in that particular environment. If you look at another annexure we provided, which is speaking to note number 29 of the annual financial statements, which is linked to the issues of why we have irregular expenditure. Again, if you look at those faces, the second area is the area of finances, the issues of controls and the things that are not happening that should ordinarily be happening that are landing us in the wrong in the wrong side of auditing, so to speak. So what I'm in essence saying, the corrective action that has been taken is in process, and it is due for conclusion and ratification and implementation come the next financial year. That will deal with the issues of competencies that we require to be able to adequately discharge of our duties for compliance, not just malicious compliance, and also to deal with the issues of numbers, the quantum and also spread in terms of service points that we can actually do our job adequately. Program 4 was indicated as missing. Now, it would be interesting that you would note that all the non-achievement parts are actually Program 4. We don't have any achievements from Program 4. Which slide is it? Can someone just say what the slide of non-achievement? If you look at the slide of non-achievement, that is where Program 4 is. And if I'm understanding you, the way you're picking Program 4, it is the CRS, the registers. No, but the point I'm making is that Program 4 is not in the achievement section. It's all affected by the non-achievement. It is the areas that is speaking to why we have not achieved the turnaround times. Those are registers. Maybe let me just get hold of that. Sorry. Remember, if you look at slide number 30, that will be the registers function. That will be Program 4. Okay, there's another area for it. It's not the only part. And also, if you look at non-achievement, that is starting on slide number on number slide number 23, you can see, you are covered, sir. Okay, and then it follows on. That is why it's not in the achievement file. in respect of the slide 19, I think up until slide 21, there are errors there, honourable members and chairperson. I think if we can just be afforded an opportunity to correct that, because they were audited and we did achieve in those areas, there's an error that happened in the production of the presentation. With the permission of the chair and the committee, we can resubmit that as soon as possible so that you can have those areas of achievement properly accounted for. There was a question that also related to how many black contractors have actually migrated between grade 6 up to grade 9. We haven't provided that particular breakdown in terms of our annual report, but Honourable Chair and members, we can provide that particular breakdown because we do a breakdown of which ones are black and so forth. So as part of the supplementary information we can provide that particular detail. But in the annual report, we provided a global picture of the migration in terms of rate of percentages of what have been the movements between the grades have been in the register of contractors. The other very difficult question that was asked is the one on transformation, and the question specifically was, do you have a system for it? A crude answer would be that, no, we do not have a system for it. That would be a crude answer. But an answer that is informed by not crudeness, but practicalities of understanding who does what where. Yes, there is an emerging system of how we are driving transformation. Why do we say that? We say that because at one level, you have a process of charters for every sector, where the public sector and the private sector comes together and collectively says, for our sector, what do we determine to be our sector to be realistic, what will constitute transformation? And then they agree on targets, which then get ratified to say, these are the targets with issues in respect of ownership, management control, shareholdership, who you do business with. So that is firstly the first marker towards which we operate under, to say, what is the industry in which we're tasked to regulate, which is the construction industry's agreed targets. So we're firstly bound by that to say that sets out what the targets we should be chasing in that particular environment. The second indicator we would use for us to track transformation are the issues of responding to the social deficit issues of South Africa, which saying, how do you deal with demographic issues in respect of gender, in respect of race, which are legislated in our country, in respect of saying, if the population of South Africa is 51% women, then there must be a reflection of such in terms of contractors. If there's a reflection that says, for argument's sake, Africans in South Africa are 70%, we should see a similar reflection of that in the terms of registered contractors in our particular register. Now, as a regulator, what do we do? We are there to promote growth in the industry. We have to take initiatives to promote growth. We do not dish out work in terms of who gets what particular work. We issue out standards to guide the clients who are the buyers in the market, which is the construction industry. Now, it links back to some of the targets that we've said that were not achieved and the issue that was raised in relation to saying, but we can't blame economical performance. Now, those monitor in Annexure 1, those monitor graphs are firstly painting a picture of saying, we must firstly understand the environment in which we're in. What is firstly primarily happening in the environment? If there's no work coming into the space, if the pie is not growing, there's very little space for transformation. Because what then happens, there is a fight for the little that is available. Now what the indicator is showing us is a simple unkindly fact, and it was also confirmed by Stats SA recently in its report. Out of all the sectors that are measured in the GDP, construction contracted I think we need to acknowledge that particular reality. It's the only sector currently that's actually in technical recession. It is growing at a minus than a previous period of economic activity. That's number one. So it creates a problem of saying, one, you then there's very limited room for transformation because the pie is not growing and people are fighting about what is actually available. Now, in the presentation we did to the minister in the debrief we were doing to him, we raised a particular challenge with him to say that I'm still answering the question of saying that when you follow who are the players in the system to answer the question of transformation, who does what in what particular space. We are the only agency in the construction space that has been given two mandates. The one that always is predominant is the one of regulation. The other mandate we've been given is to develop. It's a very difficult task. On one hand, we're asked to develop, to be a developmental agency. On the other hand, we're asked to be a regulator to uphold the best principles to guide and to move forward. Now, it can create a schizophrenic organization. Because on one arm, it is trying to push for development. How do you alter standards? How do you alter this so that development can actually happen? On the other hand, you are also being asked to uphold the higher standards without particular compromise. Now, how does this all then impact the question of transformation? One, the pie is not growing. It is actually becoming smaller. Two, we are asked legislatively to make sure that the demographics are equally represented. On one hand, we are given a charter through a code that says this is what industry has agreed to is what is acceptable. Now, these things do not always generally always agree. Now, dealing with all the complexities of all of these issues, the minister has actually asked us with the department to set up a task team to answer the nexus question of development and regulation. So that's why I said, sir, in the beginning, I can give a crude, simple answer to say, no, we do not have a system yet, but we're obligated to develop one, and we're in the process of developing it. What I've shared with the committee is to explain some of the issues that we're dealing with and the difficulties that we're dealing with. So crudely to answer you, sir, no, we do not have it simply, but we're working towards to put something together. Can I ask the acting CFO to answer the specific questions that deal with consequence management that arise from Note 29? That's one aspect. And then, Chair, I will take any further questions of what I've left out. Just want to answer that question on consequence management.
Thank you, Acting CEO. I think the first question I'm going to respond to is regarding the issue of the balance sheet. Honourable Member, yes, indeed, the balance sheet that we presented is a bit of an abridged. However, the missing element under the liability side is that of accumulated surplus. So if you combine the liability plus accumulated surplus, will then give you the CITB's position insofar as the liability is concerned. There's 113 million. If you add it on the 70, it's going to give you our position. And on the issue of the Note 29, the irregular expenditure, I'm going to pretty much try to address the issue regarding the SM division, the inconsistent in the evaluation of functionality. The individual who was concerned, there was only one, and he was the then SM manager, whom I think there was action taken against. However, if you go to the previous years of irregular expenditure prior year, members, you recall that in particular, if you're looking at the first three issues listed there. Those issues relate to the opening balances, which occurred, I think, pretty much, I think, as late as 2012 or so. But due to the fact that they were not condoned by the board, you know, the treasury, we still maintain them in our opening balances. And yes, we did sort of an investigation in the CITB. In particular, if you're looking at the first one, where there was no supporting document and no contracts, and as well as the expired, the CIDP did actually enjoy the benefit. And then, of course, as in any free state of national treasury, you then need to look at the causes of benefit, because the individual then left the CIDP. It was just a mere fact that we're still establishing the SN unit, and unfortunately we're not able to put the required document, but the service was rendered. And then, of course, when we presented to the National Treasury accepted the evidence that we provided, and then, of course, gave us the continuation. As you can see that in the 16-17, there was a continuation of about 2.5 million. We did present that evidence to National Treasury. But on the issues, for example, all the issues are the relating to the tax clearance. Unfortunately, that was mainly the interpretation issue between us and the National Treasury and the AG, where upon a payment of service provider, AG would have required a valid tax clearance. Fortunately enough, I think prior to the year end, National Treasury came up with sort of a guideline as well as an instruction note on the issues of tax clearance, to say that tax clearance, tax matters should be validated at the appointment. So some of these issues which relate to tax clearances would pretty much be then taken back to the board as per the instruction we received from National Treasury, which now deem that upon appointment, tax matters must be in order, not on payment. So I think pretty much that's about it. However, I think definitely there said to be on issues of chasing and making sure that CIDP is we are accounting for each and every cent. We will pretty much follow up on issues whereby, in particular, there is sort of irregularities and CIDP did not benefit, and there was malicious intent from those people. But if it's an issue of pretty much lack of skill, we then pretty much, of course, follow the consequence management, and then try to, as well as making sure that those individuals responsible for those functions are taken to task or pretty much may be trained accordingly. Because in most cases, I think I can actually put my hand on the block, CIDP actually benefited from these transactions, and at no instances where CIDP was left out of money. So we actually enjoy the benefit. No, thank you, Excellency. Thank you, members.
Honourable Chair, there's one question I've noted I've not addressed, but I just want to ask to be reminded on it. It's in respect of page 18 and page 19 in terms of the case has been investigated. I just want to be reminded what was the question in that regard.
Yeah, I'll start with you. You come to that case.
Honourable Chair and members, this is obviously a reflection on the state of how is the industry actually complying to our standards and prescripts. On the question of the status of where each of these are, I can ask the Acting CEO to provide the details thereof, because the information here is in relation, we were just recording what we are processing. We have investigating committees that process things and come up with outcomes and prosecute. So if part of the supplementary information, this will become number 3, to provide the details of where all of these cases are. Because they relate to the performance of what the contractors are actually transgressing, and I'm sure you can see them in terms of the category of what they are doing and not doing, and also what the clients are doing and not doing. When it comes to the question on page 19 on non-compliance by employer. The employer there is all the client departments. This will be local government, metros, district municipalities, state-owned entities who are the buyers in the market. So this is what is coming from our register of projects, where they have reported back to say, this is what we have done in the accounting period in terms of reporting how many contractors have we actually terminated in this regard. What I want to hasten to say, however, because any organization grows moving forward, we have not been processing, connecting these outcomes to our registers. Now, we are going through a process of reviewing the registration criteria for our register of contractors. Now, one of the things we want to do, we want to bring these issues that come out of here to be considered factors when a person wants to renew their registration, i.e., if, for an example, a Mveseko contractor was fired by an employer, as you see on page 19 for non-compliance, there should be some form of a penalty that is accrued if, let's say, I was a grade 8, that maybe I moved to a grade 7. Because quite clearly I'm not performing to the standard that is required. Well, the register is there to provide a macro risk management tool to assist clients and to give them the comfort, the employers that is, that when they say they want a grade 8, a grade 6, they're getting a particular level of competence. So we haven't completed the circle of feedback that comes from non-compliance of contractors. That is just one part I just wanted to add.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just to go back to, I see honourable members back in the House, you asked a question around IT systems. I come from the IT industry myself, I don't come from the construction business, so I do have a little bit of knowledge around that. It is not as simple as getting somebody in 5 days to do what we want to achieve. We really want to put proper ERP systems. For instance, when you register with the CIPC, yeah, that is the kind of level of registration or even SaaS that we are talking about. So it is not something that can just be done. Internally, definitely, we have no capacity to do it. So what we are doing is that we have advertised for a position, a very senior position of a CIO, Chief Information Officer, who then, only after that, would we be able to, he or she will lead the implementation of that, which is quite complex. So we want to be, what are we trying to do, Honorable Stoll? We want to make sure that when somebody is in the rural areas, on their cell phone, they would be able to register if they so wish, you know, without compromising the securities of their information and their details. That's why I'm saying it's very, it's not as simple as that, because people's information can end up wherever, as you know. So we're busy with that. We will do it, and we'll do it properly. The second thing, now that you're back, I see you're quite passionate about issues of training and things, as we're saying, and maybe I'll cover Honorable Stone as well. I think what the acting CEO has raised, it is a real issue. The tension between us being an organization that is there to monitor and to register and to make sure that standards are followed, but also the requirement of the law to develop, it's a big tension there. Who are we? What are we? What is really our calling? It's a very difficult one. There's a tension there that I think at some stage it needs to be revisited. Because we are not a university. We are not a training institution. We are not all these things. And we have no capabilities to do all these things. And all what we can do is to try our best to maybe connect our own members with universities, with training institutions and so on. Because we are not about to develop a training institution. So there is that tension, which I must admit, but we are not saying that we're pulling back. No, we're going ahead to make sure that we participate in the transformation of this thing. Honorable Stoll, I've said before, I think it was last year, and I'll say it again. As you know, the companies that we monitor are not companies that are building houses and so on. That's fine. We're now talking buildings such as this That's where the CIDP is involved. Let me be crude and open. If all these big companies, level 8, level 9, who in the majority are still white companies, if they were to pull out of this country, Chairperson, we will not be able to build this country. We won't be able to do it on our own. Now, you can see the enormity of the gap there. If you look at our what we've done, what have we done now? We announced last year that we were going to do away with the downgrades. For those who are familiar with our work, you know, this downgrade thing is a big thing, where if you level 4, level 5, level 6, you are not able to get a tender maybe for a year, and your financials are not looking good. Maybe somebody said, oh, tax clearance and all that. You know, members, this thing that we can sit here and talk about out there is not theoretical. It's a very difficult challenge. To get a tax clearance from SARS, when you have a business maybe of 20 people and your income, it is not as simple as that. Tax clearance from SARS, they send you from one office to the other, and in the meantime, CIDB comes and says, ah, no, you did not have a tax clearance. We don't even want to listen to your story. Therefore, we are downgrading you. I'm talking reality now. I'm not talking theory. Now, so we have got rid of the downgrading from 1 to 6. We've suspended it so that if you are level 6 and downward, we give you another 6 years of grace to be to continue to do that. Now, we are going to, because it's working out very well, to accommodate those that are having all these problems, you know, the ladies and the women and also the youth. We're extending the suspension to from 7 to 9 as well, you know, so that we cannot have holy cows. We are going to make sure that we suspend the downgrading, because who's benefiting from the downgrading? We all know who's benefiting from the downgrading. It's not a secret. We know who's benefiting from that downgrading. We know who gets very excited when people get downgraded. So we have suspended it. And obviously we've got to follow the law, and we've gone to the state
state law advisor.
Yeah, and we put in a proposal so that we don't get challenged and we end up in court and things like that. But we have a commitment to help to transform this industry, and we're going to do it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On the downgrading side, as such, I think where the CIDP can play a major role.
Because a whole lot of these people is the outreach and educational programs in that regard. Because some of the small contractors, where are they failing? They are not failing on the work that they are doing. They are failing on the administrative side. That is where they are failing. They don't understand you have to be tax compliant, you have to fill in the forms that SARS wants you to do and all that. For them, they just want to be to work with brick, mortar and water and build, those type of things. So they haven't got that type of, some of their mentality. When you talk to them, you can find out these people hasn't got the mentality that they must comply with SARS, they must comply with building NH, for argument's sake, those that build houses with NHBRC regulations, all those type of things, you know. So I think part of your outreach programs that you have done were very effective in terms of making people aware of the CIDB. But I think you should also then, I don't know whether you can, if there's room within your scope to say, but let's take these small guys and put them into an incubating system, probably for 6 months or so on, and walk the path with them. Because the guy will now think, okay, the downgrading has been suspended, so let me carry on my own trend instead of renewing and looking further and expanding the horizon and his thinking and broadening up his horizon. So 6 years down the line, you'll still find him still doing the old same tricks. But then you'll be in a position to say, but hey, I need to now, I cannot upgrade this guy. There's no ways, because he has not, 6 years down the line, he has not done anything. He just sat back and says, ah, no, it's fine. I can just carry on. So there is also that thing that we need to take these guys also by the hand and says, okay, let's walk with you. Because that is where most of the success, the failure is. They don't understand the concept of compliance. You know, that type of thing. Honorable Rider?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I welcome the responses to the question, and I think it's really nice, again, similar to yesterday when we had the CBE, to have an organization that understands what their challenges are and where they're going. I do want to pick up, however, on the comment of a schizophrenic organization, or potentially schizophrenic organization, with a serious need for a strategic review. Now, whether you've done that review or not, I'm not 100% clear on. But it goes back to my comments yesterday to the minister, and I'm going to state it here, so if we can just park it in the back of the head. To wake up in the morning and not know what direction you're traveling in is problematic. To not have a vision, a clear vision and a clear mission is problematic. You don't know where you're going. Now, I've been on the CIDB website now while you were talking. I wasn't playing Facebook or I can't remember the name of the games. But yeah. And there's no vision, there's no mission. And if you look at the mandate of CIDB, I urge you to read that on the website and see if you know what your job is, okay, having read that. Okay. So I'm just going to emphasize again the need for a strategic review and a firm direction for CIDB to move in. Obviously a lechotla of some sort with consultation with the department, very necessary, okay? But for the department to note that it's not only the department itself that is struggling with this, but so far all of the entities we've had a chat with. There seems to be kind of a, okay, we know pretty much what we're supposed to be doing, but there's not a firm drive, there's not a firm direction. And you look at CIDB established in 2000 in terms of the Act. Has there been a strategic review since then, a real thorough one? I'm not sure. The Public Works, if you have a look at Public Works' vision and mission, that was last reviewed in 2003. Okay, so yeah, it's embarrassing. Yeah, cool. So all I'm saying is thank you for the presentation. It's nice to see a group of people that understand what their challenges are, that have an idea, that have the drive to take it through. But I think it's important to bring the department with you on board, agree on a firm direction, put it down in writing, and let us all know, let South Africa know, this is what CIDB does, because if you go on your website, I promise you, you won't find out. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable Matthijs.
Thank you, Chair. And just to address our IT guru, I was not saying that you must be able to appoint or have a system in place in 5 days. But what I was saying is that there shouldn't be such a lengthy delay to appoint someone to develop a system. Obviously, building a IT system takes a long time, and I'm doing it currently now, right, for internal processes. You search, you go back and forth, you say this is your specs, etc. So you're at a space now, and you've been responsible for these registers for a very, very long time, and it's a very crucial part of our development in this country. So, I mean, waiting to appoint someone... And I'm not saying that that process of appointing someone and then, you know, calling for proposals for someone to come and build the system that you want, but I'm saying there are footprints of systems out there, and there are IT companies that you sit with and you say, these are the specs, this is what I want, this is the app that I want. So I don't understand what would be the holdup on identifying a company, sit down with them and, you know, get them to start building the system. I do get that it's not going to take 5 days to actually build a system, but it really shouldn't take a long time to identify a company to build the system that you need to do. That's what I was saying. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. members, we are pressed for time, and the hotel has got certain time frames because there's also other people that's using their facilities as well. And we need to break for lunch. I just want to find out from the chairperson if I can give you 1 minute to wrap up. The other outstanding issues, I know you are quite good in responding to us in writing, CEO. If you can respond to us in writing with all the other outstanding issues. But like I've said, our commitment as this portfolio committee is that we will engage quarterly with each other, because we see that you have got wonderful people among your ranks. We don't know them, so then we must wait a year to get to know them or see new faces and all that. So we'll be engaging quarterly with each other so that we can also as a family stays together. Nola was saying to me, the family that prays together stays together. But here it is the family that works together stays together. In this regard. Chairperson?
Thank you, honorable members. Let me also apologize on behalf of one of my acting executives for calling the members guys. You know, he's young, so we'll apologize for that. I think just from my side, really, just two things. One is to continue to extend an invitation to members that when we have the national stakeholder forums, we will continue to extend the invitation so that when we're there, you know, in the past, ministers always came with us and some members. Hear for yourselves on the ground what the issues are. I know we summarize them, but that's very different. Yeah, sit and listen. You would remember, you were not with us, we were with Honorable Sultani in the Eastern Cape, where people wanted to beat us up. They locked the room, they say, you're not going out of here, we are going to beat you up. You are the cause for us not to get tenders. Eastern Cape, yes. Yes. So they refused to eat, because they said, we are here, we are just coming here from Johannesburg to tell them stories. That's the kind of thing that let's engage at that level, so we'll appreciate it. But I think secondly, just to say that, honorable members, thanks for your support, but if you happen to be in Pretoria or Johannesburg, please come and visit us in our offices and talk to us. We'll take you through all various divisions and what we're doing. Today it was not to review the activities of the CIDB as such. It's really the financial side, isn't it? So when we do that, honorable member, you raise the question of the strategic reviews. That has been done, but maybe today it was not for us to review that. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. 1 minute.
So we are the leader in... We should speak more. No, Chairperson. No, in fact, in short... In short, everything is in line, and we've noted issues that have been raised by members here that are going to help us, you know, develop our things further. And another thing is the board of the entity is also on the verge of being confirmed by the minister by end of this month, as the minister also mentioned yesterday. So that will also be sorted out. And the positions have been advertised also, and we're working very closely with the entity to ensure that is done as well, speedily. Thank you, Chair.
That person is, can you verify what he says? Okay.
That's beyond my competence.
thank you, Chairperson, and your team. We want to wish you all the best for the future and in your future endeavors as well. And we hope that when we see each other now, again, DDG, that the actors will become permanent role players and not on an acting capacity. Parliament has also learned from you guys now in terms of putting people in acting positions as actors. So, Honorable Sithole will be quite well rest and assured that next time when we meet that there will be permanent role players as such. So DDG, we really call upon you guys. We will also put the emphasis to the minister that something needs to be done drastically and speedily in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson, and your team, your CEO, the CFO, and COO, and the CFO and ICLO and II, sorry. But all the best and go well, and please, to the best of your ability, just do the function. Do the work, do good, and God bless you in your endeavors. And as I've said to the previous team, if we don't see each other before the Christmas period and that, have a well-deserved break, spend the time wisely with the legal family. The illegals cost a lot of money, as I've heard. Spend it wisely. Spend it wisely with the legal ones, as such. Members, we're going to break for lunch. Please join us for lunch. Straight through and then right. And we will be back here at 2 o'clock again. Thank you very much. Yeah, the NDT is, remember in Johannesburg, Chairperson, we made a commitment that at the meeting we had at Over Tambo Hotel, we made a commitment that the entities will support each other. Now, I don't know how your schedule is in terms of flights and all that, but it will be grateful because the IDT will be next. And we're pushing to get out of here by 4.
Now we'll be here.
All right, thank you very much.
Did you change? Yeah?
I changed my plan.
Yeah, everyone. I said you must change it.